Well, my appointment is as professorial fellow in the Melbourne Law School and also the Faculty of Arts. I'll be teaching a little bit in both the law school and also in the Faculty of Arts. My main professional life is as a philosopher, and I was until this appointment a professor of moral philosophy in King's College London. And also a professor of philosophy at the Australian Catholic University. And I just divided my time 6 months in England and 6 months here. My research work is across a number of areas, directly in philosophy, mostly in moral philosophy, but it's also extended into political philosophy and the philosophy of law, and hence my appointment also in the law school. But as well as doing what academics call research, I've been involved in public, I hate this expression, it's an ugly expression, but public intellectual life to some degree. And I've also written in a quite different way when I wrote a book called Romulus, My Father. A film was made of it, of the same name, starring Eric Banner. That's a different kind of writing. So I'm doing all three things, as it were, reasonably straightforward academic research, writing much more of a creative kind, as was evidenced in Romulus, My Father, and also the more public intellectual activity. And as an example of that public intellectual activity are the series of public lectures called the Wednesday Lectures. That's been running for 11 years now. I started them first at Australian Catholic University, and they've, as it were, come over to Melbourne University with me. And this year's series has been called Secrecy and Power and Democracy. It's been interesting. They've made a real impact on Melbourne life. In fact, the title the Wednesday Lectures, was an affectionate title given by Melburnians, and we attract a very good audience, especially since in this city there are now so many public lectures. The Wheeler Centre, for example, has lectures almost every night. And I think that one of the reasons we've been able to continuously attract a large audience is because the lectures are given very seriously without any... I mean, they're serious lectures, but given without any kind of condescension whatsoever to an audience that is not specialist, but which is expected to think hard. And because it's expected to think hard in a way that doesn't imply any condescension to the audience, they do think hard. And I think that's one of the reasons why the lectures have been so successful, and have produced, in fact, three books which have been extremely well reviewed. One was based on a series of lectures on the invasion of Iraq. The book was called Why the War is Wrong. Another on Muslims and multiculturalism, which came out just this year. And the year before, a book came out, Gaza, Morality, Law and Politics, which was on the invasion of Gaza. And there's another book now in the pipeline, Who's Afraid of International Law? Well, I think, in part, the theme of secrecy is obviously relevant because of WikiLeaks, which is the leaking of thousands of documents was a very significant political event, perhaps one that defines, to some degree, our times. Anyway, the effects of WikiLeaks will be felt, for good or for ill, for a very long time into the future. It's quite obvious why we would want to have a series of public lectures that dealt to some degree with the issue of secrecy, of under what conditions governments are justified in keeping secrets from their citizens and under what conditions they're not. But the theme is also broader because it seems to me that one of the reasons why there was so much sympathy for Assange and so little sympathy for the governments that had been embarrassed, or indeed worse than embarrassed, by the leaks that came from WikiLeaks, is because there's a kind of crisis of trust that for many years governments have betrayed the trust that their citizens put in them. and without which there can't be justifiable secrecy in a democracy. Citizens have to be able to trust their governments to withhold secrets rightly and justifiably rather than wrongly for all sorts of reasons. And that trust has been seriously eroded. And so the question then comes up, given that trust is seriously eroded in many democratic governments, what kind of dissent to those governments is legitimate? And this was a question that was very much at the forefront of my mind when I decided on the topic for this week's lectures, because I was in London at the time and there were violent demonstrations, student demonstrations, in fact, over incredible fee hikes, hikes of fee from £3,000 a year to £9,000 in some cases. And after a very serious betrayal of promises by the Liberal Democrats, who had promised no fee rises, but who then formed a coalition government with the Tories, and so you got these incredible fee rises. And what I found interesting was that the students were incredulous that after breaking such promises, the leader of the Liberal Democrats lectured them sanctimoniously, waving his finger at them, accusing them effectively of being juvenilely unrealistic about the nature of politics. And I was struck, partly because I was teaching at the time and my students spoke to me, I was really struck by the incredulity that they expressed. They thought, how can this be possible? It's one thing to break your promises, but it's another thing to lecture us so sanctimoniously, having broken your promises. And it was as though the violence in those demonstrations was a way of a kind of political equivalent of what one would do in private when one was so frustrated at the way in which someone had betrayed the trust that was necessary to truthful conversation, so frustrated that one wanted to take the person and shake them as a condition of re-establishing the conditions of conversation. So part of the theme of these lectures, and indeed it was the theme of my lecture, is what are the conditions of trust in a democracy and how are they connected with legitimate and illegitimate dissent? Well, tonight's session is a panel discussion. The panel is Guy Rundle, who's probably best known to many people as a correspondent for Crikey, the online journal, but also may be well known as a scriptwriter for plays that Max Gillier has performed in. So there's Guy Rundle, who gave the first lecture, and that's a lecture on WikiLeaks. Guy has been writing a book on Assange. The other is Robert Mann, who has also written on WikiLeaks. In fact, his article in The Monthly was credited by Assange himself as being the best thing on him, and is now, as it were, the canonical piece, or Assange himself regards it as, in fact, it was his expression that this is a canonical piece on him. And there are differences between Rob Mann and Guy Rundle, and so some of the discussion will be about that. I gave a lecture last week, the second in the series, which, as I say, was partly about the conditions of trust and how the breaching of those conditions played out in forms of dissent against democratically elected governments. But it's also, and the emphasis tonight, insofar as my lecture will be discussed, will be on a point that I made, which I think was central, which is this, that as well as trust being eroded, what was eroded were the conditions for sober judgment. Because trust means nothing if those conditions are eroded, the conditions where one can protect oneself against gullibility, against all sorts of naivety, for example. If those conditions are eroded, then trust necessarily comes to nothing. And it seems to me that it's been one of the consequences of years of spin in England, very sophisticated spin, that not only has trust been eroded, but the conditions of sober political judgment have been eroded. And that strikes me as a very serious thing. I think the same thing is starting to happen in Australia, but it hasn't happened to the same degree because the extent to which spin has taken over has not been so great, and also the spin has been incredibly crude and not nearly so sophisticated.